The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. We're going to start with AARP, the magazine, and a note from Robert Love, editor-in-chief. Between us, 1973, a year that changed the world. Hip-hop is 50, NASCAR is 75, Jeff Bridges is still a superstar. Let's celebrate. 50 years ago, Americans were worried about rising prices and looming recession. In 1973, inflation was more than doubled, from 3.7% to 8.7%. and effectively ended the post-World War II economic boom. But everything is relative. Let's set the way back machine for 73, hop in the Chevy, and go shopping. You could afford to take the long way. Gasoline was just 39 cents a gallon. Eggs were 78 cents a dozen, and you could get 10 pounds of potatoes for less than a buck. A first-class postage stamp cost 8 cents. Doesn't sound that bad, does it? But the minimum wage was $1.60 an hour, and the median family income was $12,050. Our parents were watching All in the Family, but young Americans were ready for something new. And on August 11, 1973, at a rec room party in an apartment complex at 1520 Sedgwick Avenue in the Bronx, New York, a couple of music-mad teenagers changed the world. As you will read in the introduction to our story on the influence of hip-hop, which is later on in this magazine, a young DJ added a second turntable to extend the most danceable instrumental breaks in the music, set up the microphone, and voila, a new culture was born. 50 years later, hip-hop is a global phenomenon with its own style, heroes, and language. This music, a raw, youthful form of self-expression from the nation's urban centers, never sought approval from the record companies or the establishment. Like rock and roll 20 years earlier, it just shook things up. The same year, hundreds of miles to the south, another uniquely American subculture was ready to break into the mainstream. Like hip-hop, it came with its own heroes, languages, and values. Heart-stopping speed, and cars made from American steel. Oval track racing with stock cars, a.k.a. NASCAR, had begun in 1948, but it started to slowly break out of the Southeast to become a popular sport across the country in the early 90s. Which brings us to our cover subject, Jeff Bridges, son of Lloyd, brother of Bo, legend in his own laid-back right with more than 50 years of movies on his resume, and his third magazine cover for AARP. That's Jeff, he's pictured here, in the racing suit at 22 years of age on the set for The Last American Hero, one of the first Hollywood treatments of Southern rock, Southern stock car culture. Dale Earnhardt Jr. called it the best of the NASCAR movies. In the 1973 film, Bridges plays Junior Jackson, a character based on real-life racing legend Junior Johnson, himself a hell-raising moonshiner who honed his driving skills outrunning revenuers on backwoods North Carolina roads. The movie grew from a story by Tom Wolfe, the great American author and journalist, our Mark Twain in faux spats, who had spotted the trend years before. We were all in the middle of a wild new thing, the Southern car world, Wolfe wrote, and Johnson was a modern hero. He was not just an ace at the game itself, but a hero a whole people or class of peoples can identify with. Southern stock car racing culture, like hip-hop, grew organically from a regional thing until it was right up there with the NFL and NBA in terms of popularity. So yes, as you no doubt recall, 1973 was a remarkable year. We're all still living in the world that it created. Now, from Upfront, the A-list, also in the magazine, seven life lessons from author Ellen Hildebrand. 1. Embrace your destiny. In second grade, my teacher gave out an award at the end of the year to each student. Mine was the top author award. I thought, yes, I am an author, and still remember walking up to accept it, knowing I would never be anything else. 2. Keep going. Making a living as an author is super hard. I wrote 5 books before anyone knew who I was. I had 3 little kids, and my books were not selling. But I didn't know how to do anything else, so I just kept going, and with my 6th book, I got lucky. 3. Thrive on their love. Since the year 2000, I've been writing a book a year, and there were 7 years in there where I wrote 2 books, even in 2014 when I was diagnosed with breast cancer. Cancer was very challenging. I had also gotten divorced a year earlier, but the outpouring of love and support from my readers was astonishing, and I had people waiting for my next book. That really kept my head above water because I couldn't curl up in a ball and cry. 4. Quit while you're ahead. The 5-star weekend is my 22nd Nantucket summer novel. Next year, 2024, will be my last. My readers want the same thing every year, but I'm running out of ideas. I don't want the quality of the books to fall. 5. Collab with your fam. In the meantime, I've signed a contract to write 2 books with my daughter, Shelby Cunningham, that will be set at a New England boarding school. She's in boarding school, and every single day her phone calls are drama, drama, drama. So I said to her, oh my goodness, we have to write a novel about that. 6. Talk it out. I would also want to focus on the thing I love the most, which is reading. I put all the books I love on my Instagram, which has like 136,000 followers. I would prefer a bigger platform, say a book podcast. My focus will be on touting really good writing, but propulsive plot also. And finally, 7, work smart. Getting to this age was like stepping up a ladder to where you can see things more clearly. In your 20s, you're figuring it out. In your 30s and 40s, in my case, you're just in the thick of your career and the parenting is so intense. But I feel like my writing is better now, because with every year you gain wisdom and some serenity. I hope that it will keep going as I get older. And this was as told to Christina Anzito. Best-selling writer Ellen Hildebrand, 53, is known for her summary fiction set on the island of Nantucket, where she lives. Now we have a little bit of advice on how to pick a melon. Melons don't get sweeter post-harvest, says Amy Goldman, author of The Melon and an Heirloom Fruit and Vegetable Expert. Growers decide when melons are ready for sale, so what they pick is what you get. But you still can choose wisely. Here are Goldman's tips for buying the tastiest melons. Honeydew. Pick up several and go for the one that's the weightiest for its size, generally rounded and free of defects. The skin tone should be yellowish, not greenish. A cantaloupe. Look for abundant fine netting over yellowish, not greenish skin. The aroma should be pleasant and sweet. Next, press the blossom end opposite from the stem. If it yields slightly, that's good. Too soft and the fruit is likely overripe. Too firm and it may be underripe. Choose a rounded melon that's weighty for its size with no apparent defects. And watermelon, forget the sniff or thump test. Look for a weighty for its size fruit with well-rounded ends. The ground spot where the melon rested as it grew should be yellow, not white. Avoid a fruit with sun scald or one with surface pitting. Now we know. And this person's favorite tool, when I'm cooking with tahini or nut butters, trying to get the last bit of out of a jar can be frustrating. This solves that problem. The spoon, The type I use is shaped to get into every nook, and its unique handle means you won't dirty your countertop. A scraping spoon. Now we're going to move on with AARP, the Bulletin, and their latest cover story, Staying Safe This Summer. Stay safe around town. Protect yourself from distracted drivers. There's no way to know if the drivers around you are texting or eating lunch or both. Your best strategy to avoid deadly accidents is to rely on defensive driving best practices. Use the what-if strategy. As you are scanning the road, ask yourself, what if that car runs that red light? Or what if the driver ahead of me is reading a text? Doing this allows you to respond to the situation and choose the most appropriate defensive action, such as covering the brake and or increasing your following distance. Speaking of phones, set yours to do not disturb while driving and put it in a spot where it won't slide around but will still be accessible in an emergency. This bit of information, Ryan Pichich, Safety Driver Education National Safety Council. Road rage. Start with prevention, not provocation. Drive with common courtesy. Let others merge or change lanes. Drive at a speed comparable to those around you. Use your turn signals. And don't tailgate. Tap. Don't blare your horn, only as a last resort. Show restraint if a fellow driver does something illegal or inconsiderate. Avoid angry hand gestures, honking, or cursing. If you find yourself dealing with a hostile or aggressive driver, don't engage. Keep driving calmly. If it escalates further, get to a public place, such as a police or fire station. Stay in your car. If you feel at risk, call 911. This is from William Van Tassel, manager of driver training, AAA. A stranger behaving erratically. Remain calm. Move away if you want to and are able to do so casually. If you, the person or someone else, is in immediate danger, call 911 or even better, 988, a new national mental health emergency number. If you call 911, tell the dispatcher it's a mental health emergency and ask for a mental health support response team. If the person confronts you directly, use a quiet and respectful tone. Reacting with high-intensity emotion may escalate the situation. A compassionate statement from you, such as, I'm sorry you're going through this, may help calm the person down. This is from Michael Flam, MD, immediate past president, American Association for Community Psychiatry. Getting hit by a car. More than three-quarters of pedestrian fatalities in our research happened after dark, compared with less than a quarter during daytime, dawn, or dusk. When crossing the street, use only designated crosswalks, which often have better lighting, to make you more visible to drivers. If you absolutely have to cross a street somewhere without artificial lighting, try using your cell phone's flashlight. Shine it ahead of you to make yourself more visible to drivers. If you regularly walk for exercise or have a dog that you take for walks, consider investing in clothing that makes you more visible. Alternately, buy some reflective tape that can easily be applied to a jacket or shoes, dog collar, or leash. This is from Sam Shadle Fisher, Senior Director of External Engagement, Governor's Highway Safety Association. Now let's look at staying safe when you travel. Protect yourself from dangerous crowds. Summertime is festival time. Stadium, concerts, fairs, and crowded street parties. So please remember that the crush that killed more than 150 people at a South Korean street party last fall went from exciting to deadly in minutes. To reduce your chances of falling over or tripping, wear shoes that protect your feet, not high heels or sandals. As you arrive, take a moment to look around and plot an escape just in case. Where are the entrances and exits that may be closer and less trafficked than where you came from? If a crowd becomes uncomfortably dense, bend your arms and lift them in front of you like a boxer. Then, lock your hands, creating a cage to protect your chest and lungs. Many crowd disaster deaths result from chest compression that prevents people from breathing. Finally, stay on your feet. Don't risk being forced to the ground while trying to pick up a phone or a handbag, says Martin Amos, a professor of computer science at Northumbria University in the UK and co-author of studies on crowd behavior. Room bandits. Before you book a room, make sure your lodging is in the safest part of the city. Call ahead or email hotel management to ask about security precautions. For example, what controls are there on access to the main entrance and to room areas? At the hotel, take a few simple precautions. Put the Do Not Disturb sign on your door, even when you're not in the room, to make it appear that you are. Use the safe in your room for locking up valuables and important documents, such as passports. Finally, never share your room number with anyone outside your travel party. This advice was from Henning Sinman, Security Director, South Atlantic U.S. Region, International SOS. Pickpockets. Use a crossbody anti-theft purse with zipper locks or a hidden waist wallet. Don't keep anything in your back pocket. Remove anything from your wallet that isn't necessary to carry while you travel. Keep photos of your passport, credit cards, and critical information in a password-protected folder on your phone or online storage account. Make sure any travel partner has credit cards with account numbers different from yours so you can still make purchases if stolen cards are canceled. And that was from Kevin Coffey, retired detective, Los Angeles Police Department, and author of Traveler Beware, an undercover cop's guide to avoiding pickpockets, luggage theft, and travel scams. We have a couple of sidebar articles with this. COVID, it's still a problem. Plenty of people are still getting COVID, even if the pandemic has passed. To stay alive and out of the hospital, top off your vaccines. Adults 65 and older should have had the two-dose COVID-19 vaccine primary series, plus at least one booster. If you haven't been boosted and you got the primary series at least 2 months ago, make that appointment now. If you've already received your first booster, consider getting a second in April. Federal government agencies said you're eligible if you're at least 65 and got your first booster at least 4 months ago, or if you're immunocompromised and got your booster at least 2 months ago. Keep COVID tests at home. Some private insurers may still cover the cost, and Medicaid expects to provide free tests for another year. Finally, make a Paxlovid plan. Ask your doctor how quickly you can get a prescription, including if you test positive on a weekend or a vacation. Paxlovid should be taken within 5 days of symptoms onset, even if you're feeling well. Its purpose isn't to help you feel better, it's to prevent your death. And this was from Amish Adija, MD, infectious disease expert at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. And now we have deer collisions. Deer are most active at dusk and dawn, so that's when your awareness should be highest. But deer vehicle collisions can happen to anyone at any time. In 2021, 18% of reported Michigan vehicle crashes, 52,218 of them, were deer-related. If you're driving by mountains, woods, or agricultural fields, there are probably deer in and around those habitats. Take wildlife crossing signs seriously. Moderating your speed gives you more time to react. Stay alert and don't get distracted. If it looks like you're about to hit a deer, don't swerve. Hitting the deer will often do a lot less damage than what could happen from swerving, like going off the road or crashing into a telephone pole or another car. Slow down if you can. If there are no drivers behind you, brake hard. And this advice was from Chad Stewart, deer biologist, Michigan Department of Natural Resources. Now let's go back to AARP, the magazine. to the section up front, live, the rise of the backyard kitchen. Outdoor cooking appliances are gaining popularity. Are they worth it? There are a number of products on the market that can transform your outdoor space into a second kitchen of sorts. Because who doesn't love dining al fresco in warm weather? But we wonder, can the average gas or charcoal grill achieve the same results? We asked a couple of experts for their opinion. A flat top grill. The sales pitch. Essentially, a grill with a smooth flat top rather than grates. It lets you cook an entire meal at once using multiple cooking zones that can be set to different temperatures. Worth it? Maybe, says Shane McBride, chef with Pig Beach Barbecue in New York. You'd be able to cook meat, potatoes, veggies, and even fruit for dessert simultaneously, or whip up bacon, eggs, and pancakes for breakfast. Flat-top griddles are also great for items that would slip through grill grates, such as asparagus or the currently popular smash burgers. But for around $50, you can buy a flat-top griddle accessory for your regular grill. It won't have multiple cooking zones, though. Then there's pellet smoker, the sales pitch. This electric smoker, which cooks low and slow by burning pellets made from wood, achieves smoky flavor in foods without a wood or charcoal fire. Is it worth it? Yes, if you're into barbecue. The pellet smoker is a great way to learn and understand the cadence of this cooking process while experimenting with a variety of smoke flavors, McBride says. While smoking meat on an open flame takes hours of tending a fire, here you can essentially set it and forget it. Although you can get some smoky flavor from a charcoal grill or a smoke tube lit in a gas grill, you won't get the depth of flavor that a pellet smoker provides. If you prefer to sear foods, stick with a regular gas grill. Smokers won't get hot enough. A smokeless fire pit, the sales pitch. This double-wall fire pit, designed to produce as little smoke as possible, can be used to cook food on a stick, such as s'mores and hot dogs. Some models can even accommodate meats and vegetables by using add-on sear plates or grilling kits. Is it worth it? Probably not for real cooking, says McBride, as it's limited in scope and much messier than a grill for cooking meats. But for hanging out with friends, sure, gather around the fire. A pizza oven. The sales pitch. It evenly cooks Neapolitan-style pizza in minutes at high temperatures, 750 to 950 degrees, resulting in a crispy crust and perfectly melted cheese. Worth it? If you're a pizza fanatic or frequently entertain guests, maybe, says Sean Hill, founder of the Grilling Dad site. There's a steep learning curve to cooking with high heat. You'll probably burn a lot of pizza. Also, a pizza oven isn't good for much else. You would be better off trying a pizza stone on a grill at high heat. Now, keep your cool. We asked Chidimna Nkokama, professor of clinical emergency medicine at Penn Medicine in Philadelphia, for tips on regulating your temperature besides blasting the air conditioning. Fan placement. In shaded rooms, put a fan near an open window and aim it into the room to circulate fresh air. In sunny rooms, turn the fan around or reverse the blade rotation so it blows hot air out. Evaporative cooling. Sit by a fan and spritz water from a spray bottle in the air between you and the fan. This is the fastest way to cool yourself down and is used on patients with heat stroke. Showers with peppermint. Take a cool shower before bed using a peppermint gel or soap. Each has cooling properties. Natural fibers. Wear cotton, which is more breathable than synthetics. Also, for cooler sleep, skip high thread count sheets. Aim for a thread count between 2 and 400, according to the Sleep Foundation. And diet. Foods with high water content, like leafy greens, melons, oranges, and pineapples, are cooling. Spicy foods can also help because they contain capsaicin, which jumpstarts your natural cooling sweat. Foreign aid. In the movies, U.S. embassies and consulates are safe havens for action heroes in peril, but that's not why they exist. This is the most common reason Americans abroad seek consular help: missing a passport, says Angela Kerwin, the U.S. State Department's Deputy Assistant Secretary for Overseas Citizen Services. Even if you lose all your identification, the State Department can help establish who you are, find you a place to stay, or get you on an airplane. A medical emergency. The State Department can help if you call by providing info about available medical services. Each embassy or consulate also maintains a website that has useful information on locally available resources, Kerwin says. Visit travel.state.gov. Incidents of crime. If you're accused of a crime, the State Department can't bail you out or provide you with legal representation, but a Foreign Service officer can offer assistance, including helping you find an English-speaking lawyer and notifying contacts back home if you're the victim of a crime. It's also a good idea to check with the consulate. And finally for today, for this section, video on the go. A dash cam can film what's happening around your car. An increasing number of drivers are installing car dash cams. But beyond capturing some spectacular sight to share, what purpose do they serve? Peace of mind. A dash cam could provide to law enforcement or an insurance company, or could prove that you aren't at fault in an accident. Models with motion sensors can help identify a vandal when the car is left unattended. Considerations: a dash cam with 4K resolution can record quality videos for insurance purposes. An SD card slot allows for video storage. Some models can upload video to the cloud, typically for a fee. Now, a quick note from AARP The Bulletin. Under magnetic heat, I hear raves about induction stoves. I'd consider one, but not if I have to get all new pots. Induction stoves never get hot. They work by generating a magnetic current through your cooking pans to produce heat. So what you need are pans that can be magnetized. You may have more than you think. Aside from those made entirely from copper, glass, or aluminum, much cookware contains the steel or iron necessary to work on an induction stove. Okay, folks, we have run out of time for today. For our episode today of Modern Maturity, so be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards. I'm reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.